the Social Fishing Members Podcast, your exclusive access to freshwater content. Welcome everybody to this chat. We are going to dive in all about Lake Jindabyne, chasing trout. I have Ross Blakers with me. Ross, thanks for joining, mate.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Ross, you are our contributor for the Snowy Mountains region. Obviously, Jindabyne's probably your most favourable spot of the Alpine Lakes. You love the place, you've told me, and you fish it quite often. Now, in this video, this little chat or podcast, however you're listening to it or watching it, we're just going to chat about Jindabyne and give you an overview of Jindabyne, what to expect if you've never been there before, and a few tips to help you with a session when you visit. We want to create as many of these videos and podcasts throughout the entire platform on heaps of different spots. So can you just jump in, for someone who's never been, or for those who have, maybe once or twice, can you give us an overview of the lake, the size of the lake, the geography it's in, where it's based, the quality of the fishing? Is it a place worth traveling to fish? You know, because there's lakes and spots that are like, I'll fish that if I'm local, but is Jindabyne a place worth traveling to fish? Run us through a little bit about Jindabyne.
Yeah, totally. So Jindabyne, Snowy Mountains, probably more famous for being on the ski fields. So if you wanted to access Perisher or Thredbo through winter, you're pretty much going through Jindabyne. Populations, well, it's grown quite a bit, but I'm guessing it'll be close to 15,000 in Jindabyne and the surrounding areas. So there's quite a lot of infrastructure there. So there's lots of shops and cafes and restaurants and stuff. So compared to places like Adaminaby, Lake Eucanbeen or Taubingo, yeah, Jindabyne's got a lot there.
The town is right beside the lake, yes? It literally borders the south side of the lake.
Yeah, spot on. So it's literally on top. Amazing views from most of the areas, and a lot of the accommodation and shops and stuff, you know, right on the water. So, it's a fantastic location. You're about, call it now, but a bit less, 50 minutes or so from Cooma to get there. Easy access. There's tons of accommodation. You've got a couple of caravan parks that are there that are right on the water. One is 100 metres from the boat ramp, and the other one's literally on top of the water and has its sort of own gravel boat ramp there. So heaps of accommodation. It's much smaller than Lake Eucanbeen. So Lake Eucanbeen is absolutely huge. But Jindabyne is small, but still, when I say small, it's still a big lake.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like I don't have the dimensions off the top of my head, but it's probably something like, I'm guessing, 12 k's ish long.
I was gonna say 12. I think I've measured it.
So it's usually more stable on water levels. It has got down recently and then popped back up. So it did get down to like 50-odd% where Eucanbeen got down into the 30s. It's back up at 80. So it's got a really big catchment area. And because it's relatively a small lake compared to Eucanbeen, it does bounce back that water level when you get some good flow. And you are tapping into probably more high country in terms of the catchment area. So the snow melt for Jindabyne when it's a good snow season, which is the one we've just had, was been the best in many years, if not sort of a few decades. It really turbocharges. You've got a lot of flow coming in even without rain for quite a few months.
So the eastern side of Cozzie, or the east and southeast side of Kosciuszko, the actual peak of it, as it melts, it will run down into the Thredbo River and then run north into Jindabyne, or northeast.
That's Jindabyne. Right. So you've got the Thredbo River, and that's that's without any dam. So Jindabyne's the first dam, and that's got a big catchment. But you also have the Snowy River, which is a huge catchment, but you do have a few dams. You've got, Guthiga Dam? You've got... I've got a mental blank. It'll come to me. Island Bend. Yeah, spot on.
They're only little, though.
They're only little, and you can fish them, but you do have some yeah, you've got a few dams on that system.
It's
a big catchment. Obviously, for those that aren't aware, you've actually got Yucumbine River comes in the northern end. That's got very little flow because that's obviously coming out of Lake Yucumbine.
So Yucumbine, the lake, is higher in elevation than Jindabyne?
Yes, yeah.
Even though Jindabyne has the catchment for the peak. It's like Jindabyne catches the top of the mountain's snow, but yet Yucumbine's just on further over that it only gets sort of Kyandra's snow, sort of. Or does that go into...
Yeah, that goes to Yucumbine.
Yeah, but it's a Yucumbine River feeds into Jindabyne, but very little flow, you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. So you got Yucumbine River above Lake Yucumbine, and that's the main flow into Lake Yucumbine, along with the snowy scheme like Providence Portal and some of those other inlets when you're getting water from other dams. So that Yucumbine River continues to flow on the other side of the dam wall, albeit with very little flow.
They never run it hard. There.
No. And it's not far. Like, it's a pretty short distance from the dam wall down to Jindabyne. So, that sort of anomaly, if you call it that, is it's the same with, say, the ski fields, where it's like, hang on, Lake Jindabyne's lower, but it's actually got people, much better snow at Perisher and Thredbo because they're much higher altitude compared to Selwyn. It's one of those things, But, beautiful spot. You've got a fair bit of national park, particularly on that sort of northern and northwestern end. There's a fair bit of national park. And there's a bit on the southern end coming up from the dam wall, the southeastern side. You've got some little, call it town, but suburbs. You've got East Jindabyne, you've got Tyrolene Village on the eastern side.
Yep.
Then the main township, which is on sort of that southwestern side. And then it's Cowkite up on the northeastern side as well. It's a very small, bunch of probably, I don't know, 50 homes properties. Or so, 100 homes.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of private property, farms and whatnot sort of scattered around the rest of it.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of access, especially on that eastern and southern side, even on the western side too. It's actually got quite a bit. So it's a very well accessible lake with plenty of boat ramps, plenty of bank walking access. So it's a good all-round lake to visit and fish, not only if you want to fish in general, but a family spot when your wife can go do something else or partner or whoever can do something else in the town while you fish. It's a good spot to travel to, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome for families. Awesome if you've got kids. Yeah, partners. Heaps of restaurants, cafes, breweries. You name it. For the fishos, Gaydon Trout Hatchery on the Thredbo River, stunning spot. Go there for a picnic. There's a lot to do there. You can spend a fair bit of time there very easily. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the lake itself from a fishing point of view. Water clarity. You said it, obviously it does go up quite quickly. It does drop, but it sits at all sorts of different levels depending on the seasons, drought, rain. I saw it was 100% not long ago, and then it gets back down again, and then it's just filled up again from that snow melt. What's the water clarity like typically? What's the fishing like? What are the fish quality like in there? And obviously water temps are obviously on the cooler side.
Yeah, totally. So clarity is normally excellent. It's normally very, very clear. And when I say that, you can always have banks that are dirty, windswept banks and whatnot. But if you were in the main basin and out near the middle, you'd typically be looking at 3 meters. Like, this is sort of really nice snowy mountains, clear water lakes. This is not sort of dirty water. Like on your side of the mountain, this is more like, Taubingo, not Blowering, sort of thing. So it's that beautiful, clear water. It is really dirty right now, but the lakes have gone from 50, or Jindabyne's gone from 50% to 80% over the winter. So lots of rain, lots of snow, And it's probably one of the fastest jumps that it's had in a long time. The lake was actually going up at 50 mil a day in height, water level, for a number of weeks. That's how much flow was coming in. So again, 2 inches of vertical height a day. So with that, I was really blown away. Visibility, so I fished it last week for 2 days or a day and a half. Visibility was really poor, particularly up the river arms. And when I say really poor, I'm talking about down to a meter. I can't remember since I've, you know, seen it that dirty.
Was it brown dirty or was it like a green dirty?
Just a green dirty, yeah. So it was still sort of, yeah, clear, same sort of level, but it was more green. Yeah, same sort of colour, but yeah, just, but yeah, a lot of more, just discoloration coming through it. So
did it affect the fish?
Well, no, yeah. I had a cracking session. You do have to change when it's a bit dirty. I like to have a bit more presence with the lures. So whether that's just something with a bit bigger wobble, whether it's something with some bearings in it to have a bit more sound, or increasing the brightness of the colour. So yeah. I certainly changed that up and, yeah, but I, you know, caught 25 fish in the 2 days. Second day was 13 fish in, was started trolling from about 8. I was off the water at 1. So like 13 fish, you're getting, a fish every half hour. That's sort of as good as it gets from a productivity perspective. So yeah, it hasn't affected the fishing. You need to adjust for it, but yeah.
So if someone goes to visit, clarity is never going to be a problem. 90% of the time, it's going to be clear. Very rarely will it be discolored. If it ever is discolored, it's not going to matter too much. Totally. Just adjust the way you fish. And obviously, you get dirty edges, but that becomes its own form of structure as it is.
100%.
What's the quality of the fish like? The species in there? How do they behave? Can we cast the lake? Obviously, trolling for trout is a typical technique, but what's the quality of the fish in the system, the numbers of the fish species?
Yeah. So really, Jindabyne is a stocked waterway, but they stock with rainbow trout. They occasionally put salmon in, though that's relatively rare. So let me step back. You got four fish in there. You got rainbow trout and brown trout. They're by far and away the most common. You do have salmon in there. And you'll catch those, reasonably regularly. You usually get small ones. Each year they do release the breeding stock of salmon from Gaydon Hatchery, and these are monsters, like 4 or 5 kilo fish, like 80-centimetre fish. Yeah. And they're massive, they're dumb, and they're hungry. So they're used to being fed with pellets. They've just been living a hatchery life. They get in there, they lose a lot of condition really quickly, but every year you'll get captures of them and it's crazy. Like people will suddenly be on to the fight of their life with this monster salmon and they go hard. They're when you get one, it's impressive. Bit of a rude shock. So you got salmon and then you've got brook trout. So again, they're far less frequent. I guess you do also have and I've seen some captures of this, and it will become more plentiful if they continue with the program, and that is tiger trout.
They've put them in there, have they?
Yeah, they've got them in the in particular in Thredbo River. They've been releasing them and being connected, to the lake, obviously. So I have seen some pictures of captures of tiger trout, which is a combination, basically a breed between a brown trout and a brook trout. And my understanding, they won't naturally reproduce. However, they grow incredibly quickly, are very hardy, aggressive feeders.
Very aggressive.
Typically pretty easy to catch. So they're sort of very much targeted for the recreational fishermen, where the fisheries can get good, volume of fish out at relatively low cost. But back to, I guess, your main things you're going to catch are brown trout and rainbow trout. Brown trout are not stocked and haven't been stocked for like decades. So any brown trout you catch are naturally, you know, reproducing from the rivers, spawn run, and they're plentiful, absolutely. The rainbow trout are stocked, and they've got a pretty aggressive stocking program. Jindabyne's held up as the sort of place to go and catch a fish. And so in terms of, and I forget the exact terms, that New South Wales fisheries and the stocking program, but Eucombine is your trophy fishery where you've got fewer fish, you know, given the size of the lake, but you'll get much bigger fish. Whereas Jindabyne, you know, you'll get more fish in there. They stock it up with bigger numbers. So all else being equal, it should be easier to get fish, but they're probably going to be typically a bit smaller. But Jindabyne has big fish, don't get me wrong. Like every year we'll get fish pushing, up to 5 or 6 pounds is an awesome fish, you know, getting up to that sort of mid-60s. We'll get a few of those each year in the lake. But, you know, there are people will get 8-9 pound fish out of there. You will get more reports of bigger captures out of Eucombine, no doubt. But Eucombine's like, again, I can't remember, but say is it 20 times? I'd have to look it up, but larger than Jindabyne. It's a massive waterway.
And when
it's
it massive. Comes to trout, unlike natives, you can kind of look at a lake and go, right, this is the edge. And most of your natives will live in that similar depth, you know, no deeper than 10, 12, 14 around the edge. Whereas trout, you got to look at the entire expanse of water, not just the edge, because trout will live right throughout the entire water column and right throughout the middle. So if you, obviously Eucombine's got more quantity, but per the size, like, so if you separate the fish, same with how they do, what is it called for humans, where they do populations per
Yeah, mass. Like per square kilometre. Yeah, that's right. So, you would have as a fish per whatever it be, cubic metre of water, you would, I think, Jindabyne would have a much higher number, I would guess, that compared to Eucombine. It's a great place to go. You should be able to come up the curve pretty quickly and through, you know, the reports and the information and the videos on the social fishing site. You should be able to come up to speed pretty quickly, and you should be able to get amongst some fish fairly quickly.
What's a typical, just really quick, to water temperature? Obviously we'd get from almost very cold, I've seen videos of it frozen there at times, to what's a typical summer temperature at the surface? Obviously, trout will push deep and sit on a thermocline, which is going to remain, or just above thermocline, which is going to remain very, very stable water temp that they enjoy. But what, it does it get into the mid-20s,
not low that, 20s? 20, probably 22 or so would be your peak on the surface. Okay. It does drop. Quickly as you get down, but that's a very uncomfortable temperature for trout, and you know, hit the lows of winter, you know, sort of 7-8 degrees will be your lows in winter, and ironically there, just like summer trout, at 7 or 8 degrees on the surface, it's not that comfortable for them, so they'll actually push deeper to find warmer water, ironically, in the peak of winter.
So what do they love, like 12 to 15?
Yeah, that sort of range. Yeah, that's right. It's sort of 12 to 15 or so is the sweet spot. It's fascinating that the Gaydon Trout Hatchery, with the refurbishment they recently put through, they actually have heaters now in the holding ponds. Because if the trout are that cold, the water's that cold, that it actually reduces the yield, so they grow slower. Things like that just sort of tell you, okay, you think trout, cold water. And don't get me wrong, 7 degrees won't kill a trout, but 25 degrees will. But in terms of the happy place, in that 12 to 15, absolutely, yeah.
Yep. Can you run us through the structure in the lake? What's the lay of the land? Is it a steep lake? Is it the gradual banks? What's the structure, timber, boulders, rocks, clay? What do we have?
All of the above. So you've got It's a granite based area, so you've got lots of boulders, but even it's granite based soils all around there. So yeah, huge granite boulders is very common, particularly on the southern side, and sort of a fair bit up the eastern side actually. You do have on the western side in particular, you do have got a fair bit of more gradual banks. It's farmland, so you've got sort of grassy banks that are relatively shallow. But it's got it all. You can be in some areas, 50 meters from the bank, and in 3 meters of water depth. There's other areas where you could be 5 meters off the bank and in 15 meters of water depth. So it's got it all. The lake's really well mapped out. So pretty much any of your like Navionics cards and all those sorts of things, you'll get contours that are quite accurate. You can download from Snowy Hydro original maps, and they're really cool actually. They're surveying maps before the dam went in, and you can see the original rivers and where they ran before it was flooded. But you can see them very clearly on your sounder as well. You can really make it out. So yeah, you've got in terms, I guess, the main structures, there's definitely rocky areas, and they're ideal to target. There's no two ways about it. It's probably my preferred. You do have in areas a lot of timber, and there's both probably not as much timber compared to Eucombe, but certainly below the waterline. There's some really serious pockets of timber. Like you push up into Cowkite, and even all the river arms, but right through the lake, that from when it was originally flooded, there's a lot of trees. So
So those trees more exposed when it's lower, you're saying? So at 80 to 100%, you don't see many trees, and is that what you're getting at, or you
yeah, that's
do?
right. You wouldn't, yeah, you certainly, like when it was down at 50%, there was a lot of timber coming out of the water that you is now underwater. But there's nowhere near as much timber compared to Eucombe. Like in Eucombe, there's areas where just absolute thick. It's sort of like, a forest underwater.
And what are the fish, how do they gravitate towards the banks? Obviously they're a trout, so they will live thermocline open water. I'm guessing there'd be daphnia in there, like there is in most lakes, the water fleas that they would feed on. But they do they is a good edge fishery, like they'll push up into that structure and feed on the edges. Do they usually go towards any particular structure, or just as a summary, it doesn't matter so much, they'll go to all sorts of different banks based on the food source and the
Yeah,
wind and
probably
things
the
like
latter.
that.
So it's driven, there's seasonalities, definitely, that'll move things around, whether that's temperature, water flow, time of year in terms of, pushing up, for breeding, and whatnot. But yeah, they will definitely go where the fish are. What I would say that's unique on the food, though, is probably two things compared to Eucombe. Goldfish, so crucian carp, they're either not there at all, or they're not there in numbers at Eucombe. So these are typically really, really small carp, and this goes actually way back to when it was flooded. So apparently, in one of the little sort of acre-size farms that was flooded, there was a house that had literally goldfish and little carp, and that was, they believe, the source, and that just got flooded, and they've been in there ever since. Now they will breed, and you can find them in crazy numbers, like in hundreds and hundreds of schools. It's actually really cool. You can occasionally, I've only seen it a few times, but you can find where there will be, it's like fishing in the salt water, there will be a school that's been bailed up by fish, and the seagulls are diving in. And it's like looking at a school of salmon or tailor busting up on the
You can
surface.
see
It's
them.
amazing. Yeah.
Are
So
they gold or are they like crucian
they're
carp
not
color,
more
like
brown.
brown?
They're more the brown. They're typically small. So that you typically sort of call it 50, 60 mil. It's rare that you'll come across one that's bigger. it's really common that you find them inside the trout's stomach when you're cleaning them.
Really?
Like that is, quite often. Not as common as yabbies, but yeah, absolutely. You quite often find them. So that's an additional unique probably food source. The other one that's particularly through winter, and I don't know why so, but shrimp. And you get shrimp in big numbers at Jindabyne. So freshwater shrimp.
Really?
And you can find online, there's videos and stuff where people out with a torch looking at night, and there'll be like 20 shrimp. It's nearly like prawning sort of thing in the coast, and it's just like it's quite amazing. So freshwater shrimp are not uncommon in a lot of waterways, but from time to time they're there in serious numbers at Jindabyne.
Yeah,
So they're
cool.
probably unique. In addition, you've got the usual insect hatchers, which is common, and of course yabbies, in which is common as well. So that's a couple of things that are definitely unique to Jindabyne, and you probably fish a little bit differently for them as well.
Right, okay. And then I'm going to ask you about that. The juvenile trout would obviously be a big food source for them as they make their way back into the lake. If they come back from spawn,
Oh
I'm
yeah.
sure they'll have a crack at anything that's small enough,
Oh,
trout-wise. Yeah,
totally.
or
It's like,
stocked trout.
downrigging, as I know it's jumping across to a different podcast, but leading up to spawning time, so say May or so, I will troll on the downriggers up in the river arms, 15, 17 centimeter Rapalas, in spotted dog color, replicating a little brown trout, but literally we're talking about 15, 17 centimeter lures, and it's amazing what you could have a 40 centimeter trout, take down a 15 or 17 centimeter lure. So yeah, that predatory sort of nature in their DNA is absolutely there. They'll happily smack whatever's around, no doubt.
Okay, so moving on to the approach, you said you would approach Jindabyne a little bit differently. Can you run through all the techniques that you would use if you were to go there? Just a summary of whether you're land-based or from a boat. Obviously, different seasons for different things. We'll do another chat about seasons, but what are the range of techniques that you would use? Obviously, these are the same techniques you would use for chasing trout anywhere, but what's the little extra things you would do for Jindabyne with each of those techniques? Land-based, obviously a good spot to land-based fish.
Yeah, definitely. Some really good options for land-based. Targeting time of the year, the seasonality and weather. So if you can get a windswept edge, that's definitely going to be better as it gets warmer, like from now all the way through until probably March.
What are we now? November. Start of November, end
But
of October.
even October, and like last week, for example, I was on the downrigger. So it's about you need to fish deep through the day, unless it's a miserable day that's cold, then the trout will push up high. But if it's a blue sky day, all the way through now, you'd need to be fishing deeper. First light, last light, and into night, the trout will absolutely push up into the shallows and they will feed.
Even through
So you
summer?
may, yep, even through summer. So like a lot of the fly fishing guys, pretty much just come out, have dinner, and then they'll fish for 3 or 4 hours in the evening, and the trout are active. That sort of low light conditions definitely is what you want to be targeting, and then fishing deeper. Now that's in the warmer months. Getting into, I guess, leading up into spawning time. So this is sort of March, April, May, and depending when the rains, even into June. The fish start to aggregate up into the river mouths, in particular Thredbo arm. So, targeting them there, that can be amazing fishing and so frustrating at times because sometimes they're just not on the chew. So there can be serious numbers, like thousands of fish in those arms, and they can be shut down. And so, but that's where you go to target. So that's definitely something that you would want to look at focusing on. And then winter is awesome for just walking the banks, so you can fish shallow all through the day, nice and close, target the edges, and the fish post-spawning, it's probably my favorite time to fish, you can just walk the edges and get some amazing fish. They're hungry, they're aggressive, and you can get some great numbers and some great fish doing that.
You can sight fish Jindabyne too, like, because of the elevation on some of those banks, and that would be something you would do through the winter and very early spring if you were to do your sight fishing on those calm, sunny days.
Yeah, spot on. Particularly, and even though I love my overcast days and you will get more fish, a sunny day, particularly through winter, can be amazing for sight fishing, because the water's cold, the fish have spawned, they're out and they're feeding, and there are numbers. So, and that can be phenomenal. So getting up, particularly if you can get up, say, a couple of metres, something that is phenomenal. Like sight fishing, seeing a trout cruising the edge, casting to it, it's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah, unreal. So you've got, that's your edge fishing. Can you run us through the techniques you would use from a boat? Obviously, from a boat, you could cast to the edge in the winter time. Obviously, you've got your typical, in the winter, they're going to be higher in the water column. Run us through your techniques you would use. Typically, you've got flatlining, casting the edges, and then your lead line and your downriggers, obviously, for the time of year. Is there anything specific you would do about any of them based on the food source or Jindabyne in itself?
Yeah, look, definitely. So one thing with those shrimp through winter, and I was only really starting to get onto this, but using tiny plastics on really, really soft jigs, so talking 1/20th of an ounce, and working those, but sort of imitating the shrimp and yobies, that was incredibly successful. I was quite blown away with how productive that was, and particularly with the trout that have aggregated for spawning. So this is obviously not in the rivers themselves, but in the lake. Couldn't get any interest from them, but using that technique and sort of, very slow sink and then sort of whipping that lure up was amazing. Like, it was really productive. So I think, the plastic side of thing is something through winter. You can do it again in the low light conditions, but that can be certainly really productive. Fishing the edges, hard body, so minnow style lures, hard vibes, and just depending on the depth, whether you want sinking or suspending. And probably my favourite type of fishing, bar none for trout, is top water. So benders, those surface hits, it's just awesome. So that is something through winter you can fish all day. Get the conditions right, and but this time of year it's getting hard. It's really just that last half an hour of the day, or first thing in the morning, so or through the evening, you could certainly fish top water, but you wouldn't do it sort of through the day. As it gets warmer, you got to get deeper. So, from here for the next 6 months, outside of the low light conditions, and if it's a decent day, blue sky, you need to be fishing down 30 foot plus, I'd say. So 10 meters plus. So that's either really deep diving lures, so things like AC lures on their deepest one that pushes down around that 30 feet, so around the 10 meters. Or things of that depth, or you're in either downriggers or lead core to get down deeper again. So fly fishing, definitely you can do that through winter or all day, but getting into the warmer time, low light conditions, into the evening, so that's certainly very, very viable. Bait fishing is probably similar. You can do that all day, whether it's power bait, yabbies, worms, or mud eyes if you can get them. you know, that can be incredibly productive at times as well.
So they'll move, so that for everyone listening, they will move on any given day. So you might, they might have been in 15 metres the other day, but today it's still November, it's 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever it is, it'd be freezing up there today and it's raining. You could cast an edge, or you could flatline for the Rainbows or the Browns, wherever they are. You could run a shallow running hard body and troll it in 4 metres if they're there. You just use your electronics, your sounders to find where they are during those conditions.
Yeah, spot on. So if I was fishing today, yeah, low pressure systems move through, it's wet, it's windy. This would be a great trout weather day. So, you know, I would definitely probably just be mainly casting the banks today on those windy edges. It's not amazingly comfortable fishing, but it's productive. Trout are very fickle. And what they are eating today might not be what they're eating tomorrow, and the weather could be identical. So at times I change lures a lot, far more than I change for other species, whether it's saltwater or cod or perch or whatever. Like I will change through the lures, and particularly if trolling, particularly on the downriggers, I actually use the active target to actually look at the bombs and set that up. And it's really interesting because you'll see the fish come and follow. So if you see that happen 5 times, 10 times, and they come over, you know, they're very interested, they follow and they don't hit, I'm changing lures. And sometimes I might change lures 10, 15 times before something's unlocked and it's game on. I think if you know there's fish, or if you're highly confident you're fishing at the right time, the right spot, and if it's not working, don't be afraid to change your lures fairly often.
Yeah, awesome. Any other tips for Jindabyne that stand out that make it uniquely Jindabyne? I think we've covered it all.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's it's a great fishery. You can get good numbers of reasonable fish, and it's just an awesome place. So yeah, definitely worth a go.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Welcome.